I opened the small fridge and grabbed the half-gallon mason pitcher that held the elixir that made life worth living, sweet tea. And my life was quickly coming to an end. We had plenty of sugar still, but the tea bags were running low. I limited myself to one glass a day, first thing in the morning, and I loved it. Tipping the mason jar up, I let the magical liquid fall into the back of my mouth and closed my eyes. I savored it for a moment, holding it there. Wine ain't got shit on this, I thought, as I finally swallowed it. I sipped my tea as I got my gear together. Since I was the only one up, I took the opportunity to clean my weapons. They had gotten pretty wet the night before, and now was as good a time as any. Mel came out halfway through the cleaning of my carbine. Seeing it disemboweled on her dining table wasn't the best good morning I could have offered. "Hey, babe," I said with a smile. She folded her arms, leaning against the door to our room. "What do you think you're doing on my table?" I held the bolt carrier of my AR up.
"Looks like I'm cleaning my rifle."
"You have a workbench for that out in your shop," she replied, with no sense of humor.
"Sorry, babe. I was up early and it was quiet."
Looking down at the dissembled weapon, I added,
"It's kind of like therapy."
She passed me going into the kitchen.
"You need to keep the therapy to your shop."
I quickly reassembled the carbine and packed my kit as Mel lit the kerosene stove.
"You going to be here for breakfast?" Mel asked.
Wiping the table with the handkerchief I kept in my cleaning kit, I smiled and replied,
"That would be great."
The girls would appreciate it. Leaning the rifle against the wall, I asked,
"Would you?"
Mel set a pan over the flame and looked up. "I know you're busy." Walking over, I wrapped my arms around her.
"I'm never too busy for you."
In reply, she reached back and rubbed my face. Her lack of words spoke more to me in that moment than anything she could have said. I fussed around the kitchen with her, grinding coffee for her in the small hand grinder. She preferred coffee in the morning. It was a secret I'd kept from everyone. I'd found a small bag of some frou-frou artisanal coffee in the house with the guy that shot himself and brought it home to Mel. After mixing some of the last flour and water, I set the tortilla skillet on a burner and lit it. As the skillet heated, I headed for the girls' rooms. Opening Taylor's door, I looked at her for a moment. It was always funny to me to see her sleeping. She always appeared to have been blasted into whatever position she was in. I sat on her bed and gave her a nudge.
"Hey, kiddo, wake up."
She rolled over and looked up at me through squinted eyes.
"You coming out for breakfast?"
She sat up.
"Sure, I'm hungry."
"Get dressed. I'll get your sisters." Going into Leanne and Little Bit's room, I grabbed the blanket covering Little Bit and jerked it off.
"Rise and shine, sleepyhead."
She immediately curled into a ball. I did the same thing to Leanne, and she performed the same roly-poly routine as her sister. It brought back memories of my dad waking me up as a kid, or when he would come into the bathroom when I was taking a shower and toss ice water over the top of the shower curtain. I grinned. These girls have it easy. I grabbed Leanne by the big toe and started to pull her out of bed. She kicked my hand with her other foot and then looked up.
"Quit!"
Seeing me, she apologized. I smiled.
"It's okay. Come on. We're going to have breakfast."
Little Bit got up, rubbing her eyes, and wandered out to the kitchen. Taylor was out there when I got to the kitchen, and Leanne came out right behind me. The girls helped, rolling the balls for the tortillas, and I pressed them out. A minute on the grill, and they were ready. Our breakfast was simple: scrambled eggs wrapped in tortillas. It was nice sitting at the table with the girls and Mel, talking, laughing,
just being together. Taylor looked better today, actually smiling and laughing a little. It was good to see her bouncing back from it. Leanne was her normal self. It appeared to have had little effect on her, which was good, but could also be bad. Maybe it was because she didn't know for certain, unlike her sister, that she'd actually killed someone. Taylor knew. She looked the man in his eyes as she shot him. Hard for anyone to deal with. When breakfast was done, I gave everyone a hug and strapped on my gear. Kind of a surreal version of the old days, getting ready for work. Except now, I put on a pistol and sling a carbine over my shoulder. Saying bye, I went out the door. "Morning," Sarge said, as I stepped out on the porch. I jumped at the sound of his voice and spun around. "You scared the shit out of me. How long have you been out here?" "A while. I saw you having breakfast with the girls and figured I'd let you be." He looked up at me and smiled. "You needed it." The dogs were at his feet, and he was scratching Drake on the head. "You hungry? I think there's a little left," I said. He waved me off. "Nah, leave it for them girls." "So, to what do I owe the pleasure of your smiling face this morning?" "The boys found them guys last night," Sarge replied, a more serious tone in his voice. "And?" "And it's going to be a tough nut to crack. These guys found Jeff while Ted and Mikey were out sneaking around the woods." I stopped and looked at him. Fearing the worst, I asked, "And?" "They roughed him up pretty good, but they got dealt with. Three more old Billy boy can add to the tally." Relieved, I let out the breath I didn't realize I was holding. "That's gonna piss him off even more." "That's what I figure. I guess we need to come up with a plan today." "We'll work it out later. Right now we've got to go to town. The captain wants to see us," Sarge said, as he stood up. The dogs followed us out to the Hummer. Sarge opened the door to the Hummer. "Hop in." Meathead immediately jumped in, taking up the passenger seat. "What the hell does he want? We've got enough shit going on," I replied. Then I looked at the dog. "Get your ass out of there." I opened the door and waited. Meathead just stared back at me. "Let him be. He wants to go for a ride too." Sarge started the truck and headed towards the gate. "Guess we're about to find out what old Sheffield wants. Let's go get Thad and Danny. I want the guys to stay here. Between them and Ian's crew, they should be able to keep this place secure while we're gone." I shrugged. "Guess it won't hurt much to get out. I wanted to go to the store on the corner anyway today." At Danny's house, Thad and Danny hopped in with us, and I climbed up into the turret, thinking it would be a nicer ride. Danny offered to take the position, but I told him I wanted to. He could ride with Meathead. "How are the girls?" Thad shouted. I ducked my head down inside the truck. "Good. Better than I would have thought, really." Thad smiled. "That's good news. I was worried about Taylor." When I stood back up, I saw Doc walking down the road, his ever-present backpack slung over his shoulder and his weapon hanging from its sling. Sarge stopped behind him. "Hop in with us, Doc. We're going to town," Sarge said. "Sounds good to me. Got nothing else to do right now," Doc said, as he climbed in beside Thad. Doc looked at Meathead. "Damn, that mutt stinks. Don't you ever give him a bath?" Poking my head back inside, I smiled. "Nope. Even if I did, he'd still smell like death." At the barricade, Sarge stopped again. Ian and Jamie were there.
"Morning, Jirene,"
Sarge said to Ian.
"Semper Fi," Ian replied with a smile. "Keep your eyes open.
That bunch of shitheads will probably be sniffing around, Sarge said.
We got this, Jamie replied.
Sarge smiled at her.
I know you do.
Looking back at Ian, he said,
The guys are going to be doing roving patrols around the back door and a few other places.
Ian nodded.
Yeah, we're in contact with them. They're staying in touch on the radio.
Sarge nodded.
Good enough.
Ian looked up at me with one eye squinted.
You know how to run that thing?
I patted the saw.
I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Pointing at the muzzle, Jamie said, Keep that pointed at the bad guys.
I tried.
I swiveled the weapon over the roof of the truck,
but it won't go down far enough to get to Sarge.
Jamie laughed. I thought I was out of his reach until that ball on the top of that damn walking stick hit me in the thigh. Luckily for me, it was just off the mark the old man was aiming for.
You point a gun at me in a dream, and you better wake up and apologize, Sarge barked.
I ducked down.
I'm sorry,
then acted like I was thinking.
Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Thad erupted in laughter, then added,
Me too, I'm sorry.
Everyone caught on, and before long, it was one continuous chorus of sorry bombarding the old man between the laughter from all directions. Sarge looked around.
Keep it up, you bunch of smartasses. Keep it up.
He paused for a moment, then added,
You can kiss my ass.
Stomping on the gas, the truck lurched forward. I was laughing so hard, I had to catch myself. Thad slapped my leg, and I could hear him still chuckling. We rode down to the little store, and Sarge wheeled into the parking lot. Business was picking up, and there were a number of people set up offering an assortment of things for trade. When Sarge stopped, I climbed out and slung my carbine, heading straight to one of the tables. It was filled with jars of honey and candles of assorted diameters.
Hey, Mario, Shelley, good to see you guys, I said.
Extending my hand, Mario gripped it and smiled.
Good to see you too,
he replied with a firm handshake. Shelley came around the table and gave me a hug.
It's good to see you too.
The rest of the guys came up, and I introduced everyone. Thad picked up one of the jars on the table.
That's some fine-looking honey.
Yeah, Mario runs D&J Apiary, a pretty big operation back in the day, I said.
Still is, Shelley replied with a smile.
I guess so. Your staff wasn't much affected by all this, Sarge said.
We lost a bunch, only because we couldn't get to them. But we've still got quite a bit, Mario answered.
How's business? Danny asked.
Good. We've got plenty to trade, Mario replied.
We'll take some, Sarge said, sliding four jars across the table.
You guys can have them.
It's good to see Morgan and meet you fellas, Mario said.
Sarge reached into his pocket.
I appreciate it, but we'll pay.
He held out a silver eagle.
This be enough?
Mario smiled.
If you insist, he said, as he took the coin.
Sarge smiled.
I do. Thank you for the trade.
This will be a real nice treat for everyone.
Mario pocketed the coin, then reached out and tapped the star in my chest.
What's that all about?
I see you guys are all wearing them.
I was kind of made a sheriff, I replied.
Made? Mario asked.
I waved him off.
It's a long story.
Why aren't you guys wearing one?
Shelley asked Sarge.
'Cause we're not part of it.
We're still in the army, so we can't be civilian law enforcement.
He stabbed a thumb in my direction.
I work for him.
Thad laughed and I snorted.
Yeah, fat chance.
Are you really a sheriff? Shelley asked.
As real as they get nowadays.
Why? You need something? I asked.
Shelley looked at Mario.
Well, maybe.
I was going to handle it, but if you're the law, he trailed off. I don't like having anyone deal with my problems.
You know me. I'll help you in any way I can. What's up?
Mario nodded his head.
You'll see here in a minute, 'cause here it comes.
We all turned to see two men walking down the row of tables. At each, they'd stop and talk to who was there, and at a couple, take something from the table before moving on to the next.
What's that about? Danny asked.
They say it's to pay for their protection, that they protect the traders here, so they should be paid for their service, Shelley replied.
Looking at Mario, I asked,
Have you seen any trouble around here?
The only trouble we have is them. They want honey.
He turned and looked at the Kawasaki mule sitting behind him. And of course, they want that.
They want candles, too. Actually, they want everything. They'd take from everyone around here, Shelley added.
Fuck them, Sarge snorted.
That's what I said, Mario replied. They haven't tried too hard yet, only because I've got just as many guns as they do.
I looked at Mario wide-eyed.
They got that many? And smiled.
Mario smiled in return. Here, anyway. The two men approached the table, looking us over as they did. We all moved to make room for them, just so we could hear what they had to say.
Mario, you have ours ready for us? The taller of the two asked.
I'll tell you the same thing I told you last time. Fuck off.
And we told you last time that wasn't going to work for long, the man replied.
He waved his arm out behind him.
Everyone else here pays. You have to, too.
And why is that? I asked.
He looked at me.
This don't concern you none. Mind your own business.
When Thad was serious, his voice took an even deeper baritone.
It is our business.
Unless you plan to pay for your honey, do like the man said. Fuck off, Sarge said.
The man looked back at Mario.
Billy's not going to be happy about this. He wanted those candles. He said to tell you, if you gave us any trouble, that you'd have to deal with him next time.
Billy? Sarge shouted. Tall fucker with a beard, black hair?
The two men stiffened a bit.
Yeah.
He looked at me, then the badge.
You the ones that killed our three men the other day?
No. My daughters killed two of them, I said.
Mario interrupted the conversation.
Look, I'll give you a peace offering.
The man looked at Mario.
I knew you'd come around to your senses.
I looked at Mario, trying to let him know that we had his back. He winked at me in reply.
Looking back to the two men, he said, It's over here, and headed towards the mule.
The two men followed him, and I started too, but Shelley grabbed my arm. I looked at her curiously. She shook her head, so I stopped and watched Mario lead the men to collect their tax. At the mule, Mario reached into the bed and pulled out a box and handed it to one of the men, then a second to the other man.
That's honey, Mario said, as he picked up another box.
This one has candles. Who wants it? Mario asked with a smile.
I'll take it, one of them replied.
Mario lifted the two top flaps of the box, quickly gripping the sides, and pitched it at them. The bees had been in the box all morning and weren't real happy about it. They exploded from the box, covering both of their faces. Mario casually walked away as the men screamed and dropped their boxes, the jars breaking as they hit the ground.
Oh, hell no, Thad said. I don't do bees, and started to walk away.
Danny was hot on his heels.
Me neither.
Sarge started to laugh as the two men slapped at the massive bees on their faces and arms, only encouraging them to sting even more. As soon as the first bee was struck, it released the sting here pheromone. Both men screamed and thrashed as they tried to get the stinging insects off them. Doc and I responded the same.
Holy shit!
Mario stood back and watched as one of the guys broke out into a run, what I call a blind lateral panic. No clear destination, just a deep need to get the hell away from where he currently was. The other man fell to the ground, his face already beginning to swell.
"Damn, Mario! I ain't never seen anyone use bees as a weapon," Sarge shouted.
"Yeah, I picked the meanest damn hive I have. I got stung every time I worked the damn thing. It was hell getting them into the box." He looked at the man writhing on the ground. "But worth it."
"I guess so. That old boy sure doesn't look good," Sarge said, looking at the man on the ground.
"That guy's going to be dead in a minute. I believe he's allergic to bees," Doc said.
"That was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean, damn," I said, still shocked at what I was seeing.
"Shame that honey was wasted," Sarge said, pointing to the two boxes.
"Oh, that wasn't honey," Mario replied.
"What the hell was in them?" I asked.
"Pig shit," Mario replied with a smile.
"I'm not going to waste honey."
Mario's reply set Sarge to laughing again. He slapped his knee and pointed at Mario.
"Damn, I like your style."
Just as Doc predicted, the man on the ground slowly stopped struggling. Even after he was motionless, the bees continued to sting him, dying in the hundreds. Eventually, they began to form a ball in a small oak tree. They'd found their queen.
"You going to get them back? Trap the swarm?" I asked.
"Hell no. Like I said, they were mean to start with. They served their purpose," Mario replied.
"That one old boy will probably make it home. They're going to be really pissed off," Sarge said.
Now that the remaining bees were making their way to the tree, Thad and Danny walked up.
"We're going to have to deal with them soon. We can't leave something like that wandering around out here," Thad said.
Sarge was still staring at the man on the ground.
"We will soon enough."
Danny and Doc walked down the tables and returned the items taken from folks sitting there. A couple of the people expressed fear, not wanting to take the items back, saying they didn't want any trouble. Danny would just leave it on their table and walk away if they wouldn't take it. Doc was looking the people over as he walked. Seeing a group, he stopped and watched them for a minute. Turning back, he called Thad and waved him over. Thad walked over.
"What's up?"
"You said there was a group that came through that looked sick the other day."
He pointed to a group of people sitting on the sidewalk in front of the store.
"Is that them?"
Thad studied them for a moment.
"Yeah, I recognize the guy sitting beside the wagon. He's the one that came and got water."
Doc nodded in their direction.
"Were those kids with them?"
"They had kids. I can't say it was those kids."
Doc walked towards the group. A woman sat wiping the chest of one of the children with a cloth. He stopped a short distance from them.
"Hi there."
The woman looked up, but didn't respond. Doc took a good look at the child. He was small and frail, 7, maybe 8 years old, and dirty. The woman went back to mopping at the kid's chest, and Doc took a good look at the lesion she was wiping. As the woman tended to the open sore, the child coughed and hacked. Doc took a couple of steps back. Everyone in the group had a cough, raspy and angry sounding. Having seen enough, he made way back to the group.
"That's a problem over there," he said,
pointing at the sad cluster.
"What's that?" Sarge asked.
Still staring at them, Doc replied, "I can't be certain, but I think they have a pretty nasty case of TB running through all of them."
Shocked, I replied, "TB?
Can't be certain without a test, but I've seen it before, and it sure as hell looks like it."
"What can we do for them?" Danny asked.
"Nothing. It takes some serious antibiotics to clear that shit up, especially as advanced as they are.
The kid has an open lesion on his chest. Probably goes in pretty deep, too.
Only thing we could do is quarantine him, Sarge added.
I looked over at him.
How the hell are we going to do that?
We'd have to feed them and everything. We can't do that. Not to mention that taking people against their will is screwed up.
They're going to spread that shit wherever they go. They're a walking time bomb, Doc added. Then he looked back at them. It would be more merciful just to kill them.
What? Danny asked.
Very seriously, Doc looked at him, then at all of us.
Have you ever seen anyone die from this shit?
He looked around again.
Of course not. Here in the U.S., we could handle it when it popped up. But in the rest of the world, it's a killer. And it's a miserable, lingering death.
We'll worry about them later. We got to get to town, Sarge replied.
Loading up, we headed into Umatilla. It had been a while since I'd come through town, and the profound change was really starting to show. The streets were littered with leaves and limbs. We had to drive around a large limb near the old Ocala National Forest building. It was blocking the road. In town, the parking lot of the Save-A-Lot was littered with trash. It made me wonder where it all came from. The Pizza Hut had been looted to no end. All the windows were busted out, the blinds hanging out and swaying in the breeze. I'm sure the Save-A-Lot was in the same condition. We just couldn't see inside from the road. At the intersection of Central Avenue and Bulldog Lane is another convenience store, and a McDonald's sits catty-corner across the street. This was the new hub of life in Umatilla. This store, just like the one in Altoona, was used as a market of sorts. A number of crude stalls filled the area under the canopy, mingling with the gas pumps. The traders were offering anything they thought someone might want, and a load of crap no one would. As we passed by, we drew the attention of everyone there. As always, the kids that seemed to be everywhere these days came running out towards the road. From my perch in the turret, I got a bird's-eye view of them as they waved and whistled. For better or worse, the change had returned kids to a time maybe 60 years in the past. Boys ran in groups, many mounted on bikes. Spears, bows, and BB guns were nearly universal. The natural state of things was returning. The adults all stood to watch as we passed, one woman waving. I waved back as we rolled through. Leaving Umatilla, we entered an open stretch of highway, and Sarge sped up. The wind in my face felt nice. I stood up and closed my eyes, enjoying the sense of speed as the wind rushed past. We passed the two grocery stores, their parking lots now empty, those that had been camped there having moved on. They had left their trash strewn about, mountains of it. At this point, I dropped back into the turret and shouldered the saw. This area just didn't feel very friendly. Sarge slowed as we approached the barricade of cars just outside Eustace. This time, though, it was manned by guardsmen. The car serving as a gate was pushed aside, and we rolled through without having to come to a stop. The guys and gals at the barricade waved as we passed through. It was nice to see friendly faces. I observed the lakefront as we passed it on the way to the armory. It was crowded with people, each at the little pavilions on the boardwalk along the lake packed with people fishing. It almost looked as though they were each claimed by a family or group of one sort or another. A couple of these small shelters had blankets or tarps hung to block the sun, and I saw smoke coming from more than one of them. Nothing like cooking up a fresh catch. Rolling into the armory, we were met by Sheffield and Livingston.
"Well, well, look what the cat dragged in," Livingston said with a smile.
I popped my head out of the turret.
"Dr. Livingston, I presume?"
Livingston smiled as I dropped down in the truck.
"Morning, Captain," Sarge said, as he got out of the truck.
Sheffield stuck his hand out.
"Morning, Linus."
Sarge shook his hand as the two headed for the building. Livingston was talking with Thad and Danny when I finally extracted myself from the truck. Livingston looked at me.
"Morning, Sheriff," he said with a big smile. In reply, I gave him the finger.
"So what's up?" I asked.
"Let's go inside," Livingston replied.
Following him into the armory, I noticed an older black man sitting in a chair against the wall. What struck me about him was the crease in the jeans he wore, like they'd just been pressed. He had a hat pulled down over his eyes and his arms crossed over his chest like he was asleep. A toothpick was hanging limply from his lips.
"Who's that?" I asked Livingston.
"You'll meet him later. We've got bigger issues at the moment."
In the conference room, it felt stuffy. The lighting was dim as well, giving an overall depressing feeling to the place. As we sat down, the lights in the room finally flickered to life. Sheffield looked up.
"About damn time."
"All right, we're here. What's up?" Sarge asked.
"Where's your crew?" Livingston asked.
"They were up all night, so we left them behind," Sarge replied.
Sheffield raised his eyebrows.
"Trouble?"
"Nothing we can't handle."
Sheffield looked at Livingston.
"You want to lead off?"
Livingston opened a folder in front of him.
"First, the bad news. Those buses of DHS prisoners never made it to Frostproof."
"What?" I asked.
"We received a radio call from Frostproof wondering if we had any information about that. We sent out a heavy patrol from our end, and they sent one from theirs. In an effort to prevent the convoy from having to drive through heavily populated areas, they were taking a longer route, using Highway 33 out of Groveland. We found the buses on Fussell Road, just north of Polk City. The buses were shot to shit and burned. One of the gun trucks was still on scene. We were able to account for 11 troops KIA on scene, with 6 MIA. Livingston closed the folder. This was a very well-coordinated, complex ambush. Sarge sat listening, rolling a pencil on the table.
"Do we have any idea who pulled it off?"
"We found several fighting positions with mountains of brass and wire for command detonated devices. It had to be other DHS assets."
"Were there any DHS casualties?"
"There were several corpses on the buses, but they were burned so badly we couldn't tell much about them."
Sarge rolled the pencil across the table.
"So these assholes are on the loose again."
"It looks that way," Sheffield added.
"You think they're headed back here?" Danny asked. Sarge looked across the table.
"I can guarantee they are. Those assholes are wanting some payback.
We don't know where they are or what they're up to. We've discussed this with Frostproof, and we think that it would be unlikely that they would try to return here.
We believe they're linking up with additional DHS units," Sheffield said.
"Of course they linked up. We assume that. Whoever ambushed the convoy had their shit together, and you can bet your ass we'll see them again," Sarge said.
"Great. Just what we need with the trouble we're having now," I said.
"What's up?" Livingston asked.
"They're just a local group throwing their weight around. Nothing we can't handle," Sarge said.
"Sure you don't need some help?"
Sarge waved him off.
"Nah, we can handle these dipshits. Hell, we've already killed 6 of them."
7, I corrected him.
Sarge looked at me. "The bees killed number 7.
"Oh yeah, forgot about that. Damnedest thing I ever saw," Sarge replied with a smile.
"Bees killed him?" Livingston asked,
a nervous look on his face.
Sheffield waved a hand. "I don't want to know about this shit right now."
While we're on the bad news train, there's something else we need to talk about, Doc said.
We're all ears, Sheffield replied, thankful for the change in direction. I saw some people earlier today that I'm fairly certain were carrying TB.
TB? Sheffield nearly shouted.
I'm not sure which form it is, but I'm reasonably certain it's TB. You need to spread the word to your people.
What can we do about it? Livingston asked.
Right now, the only treatment is not catching it. Washing hands is a big one, of course. You should have your people in particulate masks if they're interacting with the public. You won't know who has it. Anyone coughing should be a concern, but that's the only thing you'll probably notice.
Livingston looked at Sheffield.
Should we quarantine people?
Sarge laughed.
How do you propose to do that? Where are you going to put them? How are you going to feed them?
It would be the best course of action, but I don't think it's very practical in the current environment, Doc added.
We'll have to find a solution to this situation. We can't simply allow infected people to move about freely, Sheffield added.
We don't have the resources to confine anyone. If you choose to go that route, it's totally on you, I said.
We'll figure something out, but for now, we'll spread the word here in town, and you should do the same as well.
We will, but my biggest concern at the moment is the DHS issue. If these guys come back looking for revenge, it's going to get pretty hairy, I replied.
We've already got an issue we're dealing with. We don't need this right now, Danny said.
Right now, we don't know where these guys from the buses are going. If anyone sees them or thinks they do, we need to pass the word immediately, Livingston said.
We'll keep an eye out on our end. Anything else? Sarge asked.
Sheffield looked at Livingston.
Go get Cecil.
Livingston left the room and returned with the old man I saw sitting outside.
This is Cecil Montgomery, Livingston said. Then he introduced all of us to him. Cecil is going to oversee the planting of crops. He's got a tractor, and said he'll lend his tractor if we supply the fuel.
That's great news. We've got some plants going as well, Thad added.
We have a lot to get going if we want to try and feed these folks, Cecil said.
How are you going to protect the crops once they're planted? Sarge asked.
We'll handle that, Livingston said.
What do you need from us, then? You wouldn't be telling us about this if you didn't need something, Sarge said.
Sheffield shifted in his seat.
We do need something from you.
We need Morgan to handle the civilian law enforcement issues here in town.
My head snapped around.
What?
What's wrong with your sheriff? You've got one here in town.
He's missing, Livingston said.
Missing? Sarge asked.
We don't know where he is. He disappeared a couple of days ago. We're looking for him, but no one has seen him.
No one's admitting to it, Sarge shot back.
Right now, we have no reason to believe anything underhanded has happened to him. He's simply missing. What we need from you is to come to town every couple of days to deal with any issues that come up. We'll handle detaining anyone if the need arises, but you'll have to come to town to deal with them, Sheffield said.
I listened to what he had to say, growing more and more irritated. This is bullshit. I don't have time for this crap. You guys hung this deal on me, giving me an enormous area to oversee, and I reluctantly accepted it. Now you want me to have to come down here every other day? We have enough to do without this crap.
Look, we need to keep things separated. We as the military can't get into civilian law enforcement. That's where you come in, Sheffield replied.
Name a new sheriff, pick out a new one.
We thought about that, but for now, you're it.
I thought about it for a minute.
Then just call us on the radio when you have something that needs attention. I don't have time to ride down here just to see if you have something that needs my attention.
Thinking about it a little more, I added, you need a judge,
That's what you need. I shouldn't be the one making decisions on what to do with people caught messing up.
We're working on that as well, Livingston replied.
Anything else? I asked.
Cecil here will need some help. Was hoping you guys could assist, Livingston replied.
Sarge looked over.
What can we do for you, Cecil?
We might need some fertilizer, and I could use a bigger disc. I have a 48-incher, but a 60 would be better.
We'll look around and see what we can find, Sarge replied.
I think I know where one is, Danny offered.
Sarge slapped the table.
There you go.
We'll round it up and get it down here. Gentlemen, if we're done here, we've got plenty of work to tend to.
That's all for now, Sheffield replied. We filed out of the room and could hear the generator powering the lights inside, humming out in the maintenance building. Livingston came out and said something to one of his NCOs, and soon it was silenced. Cecil came out and Sarge waved him over.
You're going to try and plan enough to feed these folks? He asked.
We'll do our best. Someone needs to do something.
If there's anything we can do, just let us know.
Cecil removed his hat.
I have another idea.
Looking back, he said, but these boys don't want to hear it.
What's that? I asked.
You boys is from up Umatilla way, right?
I nodded.
You know the old orange juice plant?
Again, I nodded.
You know about the power plant there, right?
Yeah, they have a small gas turbine there, don't they? I asked.
Cecil nodded.
Sure do.
And it was offline when everything went to hell. I bet it would run.
So you want to try and restart the plant? Sarge asked.
Cecil nodded.
That would be a lot of work.
Morgan might know a little about it. But the rest of us damn sure don't, Danny said.
Cecil looked at me.
You an electrician?
I was for a long time. Worked on gas turbines around the country for several years.
And you worked for the power company? Danny added.
For a little while, I replied to Danny.
Then I looked back at Cecil, but I don't know anything about that plant.
Cecil smiled.
I do. Maintained it for years before it was shut down.
Really?
Sarge said, rubbing his chin.
You know it inside and out, then?
Like my wife's ass in the dark, Cecil said with a smile.
Sarge smiled.
I think we're going to get along just fine.
What you guys are talking about would take a lot of work. We'd have to do a shitload of line work, opening switches and whatnot, to regulate where the power goes. It would take a small army, I said.
It wouldn't be that hard. Open a few switches, maybe replace a few transformers, and we could have some power, Cecil said.
What about the gas? You said it was a gas turbine.
I assume you mean natural gas, Thad asked.
Cecil nodded.
Indeed, it is.
He leaned in a little closer, looking around.
Did you know there's still gas flowing?
What? How could there still be gas? Danny asked.
It isn't everywhere, but it is still flowing in places. I've seen it, Cecil replied.
All right. Before we get too far ahead of ourselves on this, we'll get you a disc and bring it up here in a few days. I'd like you to go with us to the plant so we could look at it and see if it's even possible.
You can show us the gas, too, Sarge said.
Cecil smiled.
Sounds good to me. You fellers get me a disc, and I'll get some crops planted.
We headed for the truck. It was time to get back home. Thad came up beside me as I walked.
I've been thinking, Morgan. Remember the day we saw them sick folks at the barricade? Tyler was there with the kids. They were playing with those kids. If it is TB, they could be sick.
I looked around. Where's Doc? We need to talk to him about this and see what he thinks.
Doc was waiting for us at the truck. Thad told him the same thing he'd said to me, and Doc thought about it for a minute.
You're not going to like it, but we need to quarantine them. Keep them away from everyone for a couple of weeks.
Is that really necessary? I asked.
At the moment, it's all we can do. If they are carrying TB, they're still in the incubation period. They would not be symptomatic yet, and making others sick. I sighed. All right. When we get back, I'll give them the news. They should be fine, but it is better safe than sorry.
All I could think about on the ride back was having to tell Tyler and Brandy that we were locking them into their house. The thought of taking someone's freedom like that was hard. I know if I were the one receiving the news, it damn sure wouldn't go down easy. I surely hoped they would understand. I was sitting behind the saw, scanning the sides of the road, so I never really saw any of it. Rolling through the gate, I waved at Jamie as we passed. She was smiling, but the smile slowly faded. Guess I wasn't smiling back. Sarge went to Danny's house. Brandy was probably there. After climbing out of the truck, Sarge asked, "You want me to do it?" "No, I need to do it. Let's go see if they're here." Walking up to the house, Jeff was sitting on the porch, looking rough. Both eyes were black, and his lip was swollen. I stopped on the step. "How you feeling, man?" He stared straight ahead. "Like shit." "Don't sweat it, brother. It all worked out," Danny said. Jeff looked down at the ground. "I didn't even see them. They snuck right up on me." "It's all right. We'll deal with them soon enough," I replied. He looked at me with a look I'd never seen before. Hate, maybe. I wasn't sure, but it was intense. "I want to be there." I nodded and went into the house. I could hear Brandy out on the back porch talking to Bobby. I went out there with the guys in tow. As I stepped out the back door, I looked for Doc. He was behind Sarge, and I motioned for him to come up. Looking at Bobby, I asked, "Where's Mel?" "She's at your house doing something with the girls." Looking at Brandy, I let out a long breath. "Brandy, where's Tyler?" She pointed down to the pond. He was there fishing with the kids. I called out to him and waved for him to come over. "What's wrong?" she asked. "I'll explain it when Tyler gets here." Tyler came bounding up the stairs. "What's up?" he asked, looking at those assembled. I paused for a moment, not knowing exactly what to say, how to say it. "Remember the other day at the barricade, the people that were there?" He nodded, but seemed unable to speak. "Doc thinks they have TB. Your little ones ran out and played with them, remember?" He nodded again. "Is there something wrong?" Brandy asked. "I don't know exactly how to say this, but we're going to need you guys to stay in your house for 2 weeks. If they are infected, we need to make sure the kids didn't contract it. We can't have that spreading here." Tyler stood motionless, taking it in. Brandy seemed to panic. "Why?" she asked, looking at Doc. "Do you think they're sick?" "We don't know. It's just a precaution. It's only for 2 weeks," Doc replied. "We'll bring food and anything else you need. It's just best for everyone here," I said.
"Tyler, you okay with this?" Sarge asked. Tyler looked at him and nodded.
"Yeah, I understand why." He extended his hand to Brandy. "Come on, let's go home."
Brandy rose to her feet, taking the kids by the hand, and started towards the door. She stopped and looked back. Tears were already staining her cheeks.
"It'll be okay, Miss Brandy. We'll take care of you. If you need anything at all, just let me know," Thad said with a smile.
"I'll be over later to check the kids and explain some things to you," Doc said. Tyler nodded, and they left the house.
"What's this all about?" Bobby asked.
"Just what they said. They could be sick, and we can't take any chances," Danny replied.
"And you think it's TB?" Bobby asked.
"We're not certain. Some people came through that may have it,"
so it's better safe than sorry. I'm going home. I'll see you guys later, I said. I was tired and wanted to just get away for a minute. Crossing the fence, I could hear Little Bit yelling in the house. Opening the door, I was greeted with chaos. Mel was trying to hold Little Bit down on the sofa. She, in turn, wasn't having any of it, and was kicking and screaming. What the hell's going on? Mel looked up, exasperated. She's got a tick, and I'm trying to get it off her. Just wait a minute! Wait a minute! Little Bit shouted. Chill out, kiddo. It's just a tick. Let Mom get it off, I said. Let me see it. I want to see it, Little Bit said. Look, it's right here, Mel said. Little Bit looked at the parasite. Ew, it's so big. Get it off. I laughed out loud. It was too funny. First, she didn't want Mel to mess with it, and now she wants it off. Just sit still then, I said. Using tweezers, Mel gripped the tick and quickly snatched it out. Mel held it up. There, that wasn't so bad, was it? Let me see it, Little Bit said, taking the tweezers. She took it outside and placed the tick on the handrail. She then mashed it. The door was open, and I was watching her. Ew, that's so gross. She made me laugh again. The kid was so funny. Mel sat back on the sofa. What are you doing home? Sitting beside her and laying my head back on the cushion, I said, just needed a break. What's going on? Closing my eyes, I told her about the people we suspected of having TB and how dangerous it was. And then I told her about having to quarantine Tyler and Brandy for 2 weeks. That's so sad. I hope they are all right. Sitting up, I said, I'm sure they are. It's just a precaution. Looking around, I asked, where are the girls? Where do you think? Sleeping. Looking back towards their rooms, I asked, how are they doing? Better now. I think they'll be fine, Mel said as she stood up. Want some chips? Wow, you make some? Yeah, made them today with Bobby. That'd be good. Mel went to the kitchen and returned with a bowl of kudzu chips and a glass of tea. I smiled at her. I knew there was a reason I kept you around. Handing me the glass and bowl, she slid onto the sofa beside me. That's the only reason you keep me around? Sticking a chip in my mouth, I glanced sideways at her. You do have other worthy assets. Hmm, is that so? Smiling, I replied, oh yeah. We spent the afternoon lounging on the sofa, snoozing. Not asleep, but almost there. Little Bit even piled in as well, lying on the opposite end with her legs draped over me. It was pleasant, just hanging out. As the light coming through the windows began to dim, I patted Mel's ass. I need to get up. She sat up. Me too. I need to go help with dinner. Chapter 5. Mike stood in front of the safe again, Sharpie in hand. He'd been working on it for about an hour and determined there were three wheels on the lock, so he had only to figure out three numbers, a simple Group 2 lock. By turning the spindle, he'd listened for the faint tick of the flywheel, picking up the first wheel in the wheel pack. As the rotation continued, he heard the faint click of the additional two wheels, known as picking up the wheels. He'd already determined the contact area on the drive cam. This wheel isn't associated with the combination directly, but once Mike knew where on the dial the drive cam made contact, he was able to begin his graph of possible combos. Knowing the contact area for the drive cam, between 70 and 80, Mike spun the dial to 25, known as parking the wheels. From this point, he slowly rotated the dial again. As the dial passed 25, he listened for the faint click of the drive cam. That click he ignored, and the rest he counted, confirming there were only 3 wheels. Now, for the hard part. Mike spun the dial to the right and set the dial on 0. From there, he spun the dial, listening for the faint click of the contact area. Each time he heard it, he marked the numbers on the safe with the marker. Each time, he reset the dial 3 digits off from the previous search, doing this around the entire dial. When he was done, he had a series of numbers marked on the door of the safe. With the numbers he needed, Mike left the safe and went to a small room that served as an office. Rummaging around in the desk, he found a pad of graph paper and pencil and headed back to the bedroom. Sitting on the foot of the bed, he laid out his graph. For the short axis on the left side, he wrote down the contact points for the drive cam, and then one set for the right side. The long axis of the graph, he laid out with the 3-digit offset of the dial, starting at 1, then 4, 7, and so on. Just as he was about to get to the good part, Ted came into the room.
"Hey, rock up. Time for a walkabout."
"Aw, man, come on. I've almost got this thing whipped," Mike moaned.
"It ain't going anywhere. Let's go."
Shaking his head, Mike tossed the pad on the bed and followed Ted out of the room. After getting his gear on, he found Ted in the kitchen.
"All right, let's do this."
"You carrying that thing?" Ted asked, pointing to Sarge's mini-me. Mike looked at the short weapon and shrugged.
"Yeah, if we bump into anyone, it'll get their attention."
Ted picked up his M203.
"Yeah, I know what you mean."
The light outside was fading, and when they stepped out, Doc was standing in the front yard. He looked back over his shoulder.
"You guys going on a prowl?"
"Yeah."
"When did you get back?"
Mike asked.
"Few minutes ago."
Mike reached into his cargo pocket and tossed Doc the stethoscope. Doc caught it and inquired,
"When did you take this?"
"Early this morning," Mike replied with a smile. Doc stuck the instrument into his pocket.
"Don't take my shit without asking, dickhead."
"You got it back. Besides, it was for some important shit."
"That safe? It's probably full of dildos," Doc fired back.
Ted started laughing.
"Now that would be funny."
"Hey, where's the old man?" Mike asked.
"He's still at Danny's. Tyler and his family may have been exposed to TB, so we quarantined them."
Mike screwed his face up.
"Damn, TB? That's going to suck."
"Yeah, well, hopefully it's nothing," Doc replied, as they made their way down the street. The guys went to the south, towards the tree line at the end of the street. They were being careful to be sporadic in their patrols, never going the same way twice. There wasn't a real plan to these foot patrols, just to be moving and keeping an eye out. After going into the woods about 30 yards, they turned east and increased the interval between them. The pace also slowed, stopping often to look and listen. There was no conversation, no cutting up. While this was more than likely to be as uneventful as the previous patrols, all 3 took it seriously. The area was thickly covered with palmettos and scrub pines. The brush made everything invisible from their waist down. All 3 were wearing NVGs flipped up on their helmets. It wasn't totally dark yet, but the light was fading fast. They'd made their way along the southern border of the neighborhood and were just turning to the north to walk the eastern side when Doc saw movement. His head snapped around as his weapon came up, and he flipped the NVG down to get a better look. Through the green murk of the device, he could clearly see the side of a head, an ear, and part of a black-clad shoulder.
"Contact right!" Doc shouted, as he squeezed the trigger on his weapon. At the same moment, he was dropping to the ground.
The world closing in around them as they dropped into the palmettos, Ted and Mike both swiveled, taking one step forward to pivot while dropping down as well. Mike opened up with the short machine gun. Soon, all 3 men were firing. Ted rose up to his knees.
"Moving!"
he shouted. Almost in unison, Doc and Mike screamed, "Move!" Ted jumped up and ran forward 30 or so feet, firing as he did, before dropping down. Once on the ground, he called out, "Check!" letting the other two know he was changing mags. "Okay," Doc replied, then turned towards Mike. "Moving!" Mike paused on the trigger for an instant. "Move!" At the same time, Ted's rifle re-entered the fight. Mike could see Doc and waited for him to reach his new position. As Doc dropped out of sight, he called out, "Check!" He was answered with an "Okay" from Ted and Mike. Mike continued to work the brush with the machine gun in short bursts. As soon as he heard Doc's weapon begin firing, he rose to his knees. "Moving!" Ted and Doc acknowledged the call, and soon, Mike was up and rushing forward as well. Ted's radio crackled in his ear.